Technology and Elections Committee. We have a quorum, so Representative Morgan has a motion for us. Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the minutes of the February 1st, February 7th, and February 14th meetings.
All right. Is there any discussion to that? That's a fairly heavy motion, very detailed, three sets of meetings. It's, yes. I notice your buddy isn't here, but...
I haven't made that motion.
Okay.
She had a long
travel distance. Yeah, on her rollerblades. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And with that, the first item on the agenda is House File 768, Representative Kaley.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and good morning, members.
Representative Kim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill before you, House File 768, is a bill to clarify some language and the eligibility surrounding absentee voting in Minnesota. I think it's actually fairly straightforward. I'll just tell you quickly what the bill does. The bill, as you'll see in the, directed to the delete all authors amendment that we'll offer here in a second. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to...
Let's say, again, here's what we're going to do. Why don't you make the motion to pass House File 768. Let's get the bill before us first.
You bet.
So why don't you do that?
I'll move House File 768, and I believe we're going to the General Register.
All right. And then you have a delete all amendment?
And then I also have a delete all amendment, the DE1 amendment before you.
All right, why don't you...
And I'll move that amendment.
All right, so the DE1 is moved, and let's take a vote on the DE1 amendment. All those in favor of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, so the bill is in the form the author wishes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the form that you have it in is actually reflects exact language. Thank you, Mr. Gehring, for doing so. The exact language as it sits and was amended in the Senate. Its companion, there's a technical issue on the revisor's office that Mr. Gehring, you and I will have to just correct that the Senate File 208 is its companion, and right now they don't match up, so we'll fix that. But in language, they do match up. They have a different revisor's number. I direct you to Section 1, Subdivision 1, of the DE amendment, and I believe this lays out what the bill wants to do right there in the first sentence. Any eligible voter may vote by absentee ballot, as, of course, provided by the appropriate other sections here. If we move to Section 2, there's just a technical cleanup there on line 2.5. Just deleting for one of the reasons specified, because here we're not requiring any reasons. And in essence, what happens, I imagine that others of you have done what I've done on prior to Election Day, and that is to show up at our county auditor's office and ask to vote by absentee, and no questions are asked, and we're given the opportunity to vote in advance of Election Day. Now, a lot of us, I think, because of campaign activities, have pretty legitimate reason to say that we're going to be outside of our precincts, absent from our precinct on Election Day. What this bill clarifies what's happening in most counties, but makes sure that removes some potential problems that might happen where one county auditor might ask for some standard and excuse provided and others not. This just clarifies it, increases access to voting in Minnesota, and levels the playing field. Moving to Section 3 on page 2, the ongoing absentee status. Again, the deleted language clarifies the lack of reason needed to vote, and then the section starting 2.21, the voter can decline to receive an absentee ballot after having gotten achieved ongoing applied for ongoing absentee status. and just requires, this is language I think that was worked out with the County Auditors Association. I'm seeing other people in the audience that were part of that as well, part of that process. And so our county auditors, I believe, are comfortable with the language here in Section 3. I will direct you to line 2.26. The first few times I read through this language is a little confusing here, but I just want to clarify this for the committee. The or as otherwise requested by the voter, in terms of requiring each county auditor, each local election official, to automatically provide voters with an absentee ballot. The or as otherwise requested by the voter just refers to the added language above, saying that if you elect not to be receiving your ballot, an absentee ballot here, right, that it just sort of cleans that up. And it was a little confusing to me the first time I read it, but I'm very satisfied with the language now. Of course, at the bottom of the page, of page 2, we're requiring the Secretary of State to adopt the rules to make this change work.
Representative Kalin, on the bottom of page 2, those last two lines, is there a fiscal amount tied to that at all? Can the Secretary of State, I see Mrs. Frazier's here, she hasn't identified herself yet, but is there any a fiscal amount here that would cause this bill to go to finance?
I'm going
to
actually defer to Ms. Frazier, so if you could identify yourself and answer the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin. My name is Beth Frazier. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Secretary of State's Office. And there may be a fiscal impact for this bill. We're still trying to nail that down. Unfortunately, some of the key staff that would help us figure that out are on vacation this week. But the bill would require both adopting rules. Currently, the rules are very detailed as to exactly what the absentee ballot application has to look like and what it has to say. It would need to be changed. And there would probably need to be some reprogramming done of the statewide voter registration system. And so we are still trying to determine whether or not
Representative Kalin, given that there is a likelihood of a fiscal impact here, I think it would be better to revise or amend your motion that instead of general registry, it should go to finance.
I think that's probably appropriate, Mr. Chair.
I'd say Kalin is going to amend his motion instead of to general registry to the finance committee.
To finance with the suggestion to re-refer to state government finance, correct?
No, I think this would go straight to finance.
Okay, straight to finance?
Straight to finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reviewing the changes that were made in the Senate, the copy that the DE amendment that we have here does not appropriate money. There was an amendment that was offered in the Senate that did appropriate money, and so that came to me only yesterday, and so I asked the Secretary of State's office to prepare that fiscal note, but didn't want to get the cart before the horse here. Really do appreciate the Ms. Frazier's cooperation here as this bill's been moving quickly and changing quickly. So appreciate their help. Section 4 merely discusses, of course, delivery of ballots here, but addresses issues of those who have trouble getting to polls and how the ballots can be delivered to these voters. And this is, I believe we have folks in the audience here who might testify to this pertinent section, and I hope they will when we get to it. In essence, right now we have, if you direct you to the current statute, 3.18, delivery of ballots to a patient in a healthcare facility, and then, of course, deleting the appropriate language requiring the excuse. But then just expanding that to recognizing that people who are in the healthcare facility, the same logic that requires delivery of ballots to those folks also makes sense to go to those who have great trouble getting to the polls. And then, of course, recognizing that assisted living, as our society is changing, that assisted living has that same limitation, those patients. I'll just direct you on page 4. You'll see that the language in line 4.15 is moved from its current status as a qualifier of one of the three statements on the outside of the envelope, and actually moves it to qualify all of them. So if a voter was not previously registered, then it just clarifies that all three of those steps have to be made, not only the proof of residence, but just the same steps that all other voters have to make as well. I don't know if Ms. Fraser, looks like you want to comment on that a little bit.
Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of what this language right here does is it deletes the requirement for pre-registered voters that they track down someone who can witness their absentee ballot. Currently, if you're a pre-registered voter or not a pre-registered voter, you need to find someone who is either registered to vote in Minnesota, eligible to give an oath, which is a little confusing, who knows who's eligible to give an oath, or a notary. And we have heard concerns from people in other states who have trouble finding someone that meets one of these requirements and is, you know, running around town trying to find a notary at the last minute to get their ballot in. But what the witness does is they look at the ballot and are witnessing that it was blank. And so it doesn't seem like there's a huge need to have somebody witness that it was blank. The voter is still certifying that they are who they say they are, that they're eligible to vote. And so this is allowing for people who are pre-registered to self-certify that they are eligible to vote. The witness requirement would stay in place for people who are not pre-registered because, like other same-day registration, they would need to show their witness their proof of residency.
Okay, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Same feeling.
And then just looking at the last section, the last subdivision there, subdivision 4, agent delivery of ballots, on page 4, difficulty going to the polls language in terms of healthcare facility, expanding that out a little bit to recognize that it's about those who have trouble getting to the polls for various reasons. That is just staying consistent with previous language, but then also just extending the 4 days for agent delivery to 7 days. And then just repealing the appropriate section of statute in section 7, repealing the appropriate statute that I believe is a section that required the excuse to vote. Is that correct? We don't have it as an addendum. And
all right.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin. What this section actually repeals is some language that becomes redundant. It actually kind of became redundant a couple years ago. It allows for permanent absentee ballots if you're ill or disabled. A couple years ago, we added the section for ongoing absentee ballots if you reasonably expect to meet one of the qualifications. So if you expect to be out of the precinct on an ongoing basis, or if you expect to be not able to go to the polls. So we probably should have dealt with this a couple years ago when we added the ongoing status. But now, since we're clarifying that you don't need a reason, this section is even more redundant.
All right.
That explains it, I guess. Representative Brush.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've heard the word clarify a few times, and it seems to me that we're doing more than clarifying. We're changing. I guess I just want to discuss the issue in the sense of change as opposed to a sense of clarity, because I think there's a big difference between the two.
Ms. Fraser, you want to respond to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, you're right that in many aspects this bill is changing the requirements. In terms of the repealer, it really is fairly redundant, and it's more of a clarification.
Any further discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you very much. This is for the author. Representative Kalin, I'm sorry I came in late, so you may have already given this information, but how many absentee ballots were we dealing with across the state of Minnesota in the last election?
Representative Kalin.
I'm going to actually ask Ms. Fraser to answer that, if we could.
Ms. Fraser?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I'm sorry, I don't have that information.
Representative Emmer?
Representative Kalin, is Is this proposal because you have seen some type of problem with people's access to absentee ballots? Is that why we're doing this?
Person, yeah.
I'd actually like to ask a couple of folks in the audience who've been working hard on this issue to address their perspective for bringing some of these issues forward, if I could.
Whoever they are, if they want to come down. I'm sorry, Rex and Healthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I can help address the question because this was an element in a bill that I carried a couple of years ago. And Representative Emmer, I think the reason for this, the need for this, is really based on the changing character of our times and our economy. There's a considerable number of people who, largely because of the requirements of their employment, are typically absent from home during the entire work week. People who work in transportation, for instance, truck drivers, people who work for the railroads are almost certainly going to be gone during the week. In fact, they're lucky if they get home for one weekend a month. And there's also a growing number of professional people who drive or fly out of the area on Monday and return on Friday. You know, if you spend a little time at the at the airport, you can see their comings and goings pretty readily. And what we had attempted to do when this came up before was to accommodate those people, because while it is possible if they can anticipate in advance that they're going to be gone, they can get an absentee ballot for that reason. But since they're almost certainly going to be gone every election, it just seems kind of dumb to require them to go through the same process of applying for an absentee ballot for every election rather than just registering as an ongoing absentee, since they're almost certain that that's going to be the case. That was the rationale behind this, and I think that, you know, if you reflect on how employment works for many, many of our constituents, I think you agree this is not an unreasonable proposal.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Since Representative Hilty has the background, I mean, I think you just said that these folks can comply, the folks that you're talking about. The problem is that there is a movement afoot that we really shouldn't require them to have to go through this process on an annual basis. Some of us disagree about that because we're concerned about voter fraud. We're concerned about making sure that the people that are voting are who they say they are. And what I'd like to know, Representative Hilty, and this is why I asked Representative Kalin, I'd like to know specific numbers. I mean, how many absentee ballots are we talking about? How many folks in this modern age, professionals that are flying in and out, are exercising their right to do this? And more importantly, how many are having a problem with this? Do you know?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I don't have numbers. I did at the time that this came up have a figure for the number of voters that vote absentee. I think it's roughly around maybe a little less than 10%. But I really don't recall that figure with any accuracy. And, of course, no one really knows how many potential users of this provision there would be. I think it's reasonable to assume that there would be numbers of people who just don't vote because they are gone and they don't want to go through the trouble of applying for an absentee ballot every time, or because they're gone, they can't. If you're an over the road trucker, and I have friends who are over the road truckers. I have a neighbor, my next door neighbor is an over the road trucker. I know when he's home because I see his truck there. He gets home about one weekend a month. When is he going to apply? You know, is he going to spend his one weekend at home every month trying to have his wife in advance, get an application for him, and then he can fill it out? And, I mean, you know, this is not, given the circumstances that many people are existing in these days, I just don't think it's reasonable to ask them to go through a much more difficult process than those of us who have easier and more convenient lives have in order to exercise their right to vote. I think this is a reasonable accommodation for people in a great number of difficult circumstances.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we hear from Ms. Thorpe, I'd like to just address Representative Emery's question a little bit. You know, I think our voting requirements are very much 20th century right now, and they don't reflect the change of most of our voters that's happened, the sort of cultural and societal change, and the pressures. You know, in my community, 70%, and I know I'm not, my constituents are not unusual. I imagine that Representative Wolfslager's constituents commute. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that Representative Hilty's constituents commute even down to the cities. In fact, I know some of them that do. And, you know, so we're talking about an hour commute each way, a shift that might begin at 6:30, 7 o'clock. They might get home if they start work at 7:30 or 8 o'clock. They might get home at 6 o'clock in time to start chasing down the kids and making sure that the kids are taken care of. You know, and this is without fixing our transport. This is without taking into account the congestion and the increasing problems we have with our transportation system. And, you know, child care is becoming more and more of an issue, commitments at school. There are so many hurdles these days to just making ends meet, and these are the folks we want to make sure have access to the basic enfranchisement of voting. And so I think that we are talking about a whole broad variety of circumstances that are getting more and more difficult for us just to make ends meet and do what most folks want to do, which is be good, upstanding citizens and follow the law and be able to vote. I also think that it's important to hear from Ms. Thorpe and the disability community that's been working very hard on this issue, and we heard some of the technological issues previously, and I think it would be helpful to hear her perspective.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mai Thorpe, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center. I'm also a member of the Voting Rights Coalition, which is a group consisting of many groups, including the Minnesota AFL-CIO, the League of Women Voters, and the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. The Voting Rights Coalition and the Disability Law Center and the Senior Federation are in support of this bill, and I wanted to address the provision regarding the agent delivery process. That provision would allow people who are disabled or elderly who live on their own to be able to get assistance from an agent to retrieve and deliver their absentee ballots the week before Election Day. And this would be extremely helpful for these individuals. In Minnesota, there's, according to the demographers, office, the population of people who identify themselves as disabled is about 16% of the total population in Minnesota, and of the 16%, about 11,000 individuals live on their own or you know, without assistance. So it would be this target group that you know, Representative Hilty was sort of alluding to that really needs this assistance before Election Day with the agent delivery process. These people are often alone throughout, you know, everything that they face throughout their day and, you know, their week, their year, and they rely on the help of others to help them with transportation, finance, things like that. And so knowing that these individuals could take advantage of this opportunity would be very helpful to them. And so I guess I'll just end it at that, and I'll take questions if you have any.
Any further questions? Representative Wolfschreger.
Chair members, would this bill help on the, we had a discussion on the House floor a couple days ago about township. Would this somehow alleviate the need to get the more expensive machines at townships? Could this be in a, it wouldn't. I'm sorry. I should let you answer.
All right. Let's let Representative Kalin respond to that. Representative Kalin respond to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Wolfschreger. I think it's a good question. I don't think it would totally alleviate the need, but I do think that it certainly will help a lot of folks who would need the precinct machines and to use the time of the election workers to make sure that that technology is working, be able to do so in advance with the guarantee and security that it's going to work.
Representative Bright, you were on the list. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, if there's other questions questions for Ms. Thor Minor for Representative Kalin.
Representative Kahn.
Just on the issue of the township elections, I believe that any township under a certain size can require mail balloting for those elections. Somebody who knows something about it should say that. But so it wouldn't even be an issue for the smallest townships.
All right.
Enough of that.
Ms. Frazier's here. I don't know for what issue, but welcome back.
Thank you. Representative Kowalski, Representative Kahn. Actually, townships with less than 400 registered voters may use vote by mail, but that does not relieve them of the requirement to have the machine.
Oh.
Because they still need to have a place where people can come and vote in person or drop off their ballot in person. And so they still would need to have a machine. If I may, I would like to respond to some of Representative Emmer's questions and explain some of the rationale, more of the rationale for all of the provisions in the bill. In terms of the no-excuse absentee voting, what we have heard is that there are lots of people, as Representative Kalin was saying, who now have, you know, very long work schedules. It's hard for them to get to the polls dealing with you know, their job and their kids and soccer practice and everything else. We also have heard right now you need to swear that, you know, you're going to be absent from the precinct or you expect to get pneumonia or, you know, you expect to meet one of the few requirements that would allow you to vote absentee. And, you know, there are some people that may, you know, want to vote absentee and may be reluctant to sign a statement saying, you know, I expect to be sick if they have no reason to know that they're sick. But then if there's, you know, a blizzard on election day, they may decide, you know what, I don't feel comfortable driving and may wind up not voting. And so this is really a convenience for voters, allowing folks to vote absentee without having to, in some cases, lie about whether they actually will meet the requirements. Another provision that was alluded to but not explained probably in enough depth is that for ongoing and permanent absentee voters, we would, right now, if you sign up for permanent absentee status, what happens is we don't actually send you an absentee ballot each election. We send you an application for an absentee ballot each election, which is what Representative Hilty was referring to. So voters would still have to apply for ongoing status. They would need to originally apply to be an absentee voter. It's just that after they have filled out the initial application, they wouldn't have to apply each election cycle. You know, as Representative Hilty was saying, that would be more helpful for people who aren't home frequently. We've heard that some people actually, once they've signed up for ongoing status, expect to receive the ballot. And so they believe that's what they've received, and it's not until they open it a few days before election day that they realize, oops, this isn't the ballot, it's an application that I need to send in. We also have heard, the Secretary's office has heard from counties and cities that allowing them to send the ballots directly as opposed to applications will really help with the workflow, because what they do right now is 30 days before the election, they send out all of the applications. Or at some point, they send out all of the applications. And then as they come in, as they trickle in, they need to send out, process them, and send out the ballots. And most of them come in very close to the election. Whereas this would allow them 30 days before the election to just send out all of these ballots, and there wouldn't be a need to then process an application and mail out a ballot. Ms. Thor talked about the need for changes to the agent delivery in terms of those who are disabled. We also receive calls before each election from people who say, you know, my mom has pneumonia. She's in bed. She cannot get to the polls. You know, and it's the day before the election. You know, can I go get a ballot for her? And the response is, well, if you bring her to the hospital, then you can. But as long as she's at home, we don't have a provision that allows you to pick up a ballot and bring it to her. I want to note that with the agent delivery, there is an agent picking up ballots may not pick up more than 3 ballots or deliver more than 3 ballots. And with all of the absentee ballots, there are safeguards in place. We are committed to making sure that only eligible voters get to vote, and that the same person that signed up for the absentee ballot is the one who fills out and submits the absentee ballot. And before any absentee ballot is counted, there is a signature match between the application and the ballot that was submitted. And so if the signature doesn't match, then the ballot is not counted. It is put aside. Also, in terms of, I guess, any concern about absentee ballots being double counted or things changing just days before the election. So, you know, somebody fills out an absentee ballot and then there's, you know, something changes, you know, a candidate dies or, you know, says something like, wow, I can't vote for them anymore. With absentee ballots, voters do have the opportunity to still go to the polling place and vote. But once an absentee ballot is processed, we mark on the roster, we write next to their name, AB. And once that's written next to your name, you cannot come in and vote. So basically, you need to beat your ballot to the polls in order to still vote, to change your vote if you've already voted by absentee ballot. Currently, the absentee ballots are delivered to the polling place after the last mail delivery of the day, which is somewhat confusing because nobody knows exactly when that is. One of the provisions in the housekeeping bill that we'll be bringing forward says absentee ballots may not be processed before noon. So then it would be clear for everyone, you know, if you get there in the morning, then you can change your vote. If you get there in the afternoon, it's too late. The final piece about removing the signature requirement for people who are already pre-registered, I'm sorry, not the signature requirement, the witness requirement. This idea actually was suggested to us by the Department of Defense for overseas and military voters. And so we will be bringing forward a military voting bill, and we will be suggesting in that case removing the witness requirement. And it seemed fair to also remove it in this case. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I hope that provides a little bit more rationale.
Thank you. Rep. Sembra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Frazier, the more you talk, the more concerned I got about security and integrity in our system regarding changing votes, beating your votes to the beating your vote to the poll. A lot of questions, I guess, are still out there. But I really do need some numbers. That would help me a lot to understand the breadth of what we're doing here. I need some numbers in regards to how many absentee voters we have, how many applications are sent versus how many absentee votes are received. You talk a little bit about, you know, some folks are expecting the ballot but getting an application and then don't know quite what to do. I want to see if there's a significant drop off in those numbers. I'm somewhat curious at, after you said that. That was interesting to me. In terms of the ballot expectation and things along those lines. And, Mr. Chairman, in response to one of Representative Kalin's comments on transportation, I wonder if we shouldn't send this to the Transportation Committee if this is an issue of congestion. A few other things, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for indicating about the fiscal note. One thing I would request is that there is a local fiscal note process, and as I look through the bill, it seems to me that there's going to be some type of local impact, and I would hope that a local fiscal note would be requested as well, and I'm not sure if that has to be requested from the chair or from the minority leads on that committee.
Representative Broad, I see that Ms. Frazier is nodding her head. And she can confirm that that will probably also happen in finance. I'm on finance, too, so when this bill comes to finance, we'll make sure that point is brought up.
Mr. Chairman, the only reason I note that is it's my understanding, and I could be understanding incorrectly, that there's a separate process for the local fiscal note request. And so maybe we want to get information and ensure that that right. piece is occurring. But to my questions now, I'm wondering, Representative Kalin, how you think that this improves the security and the integrity of our voting system.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Representative Pulaski and Representative Broad. I think right now we have some local auditors who, and I imagine that most are like ours in Chisago County, which coincidentally has had one of the highest voting turnout rates in the state, that you ask for an absentee ballot and you're given one in advance, in person. And I think you request an absentee ballot and you make an application and you're mailed one. I would hope that there would not be an auditor who might use personal agendas or political agendas to interpret the existing statute as requiring excuses, reasons that might create extra hurdles and might actually then not keep a level playing field and not have open access. So I think in terms of creating a security and confidence that our elections are being administered freely and fairly and according to the law, I think this actually helps clean up that quite a bit.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kalin, are you concerned at all about, maybe I shouldn't put it that way, why don't you indicate your concern or thoughts on whether this might increase opportunities for tampering in our system. When you start removing requirements for witnesses, when you start removing requirements that people show up, what are your thoughts about that piece of it? That's one of the pieces I'm very concerned about, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I am confident that this bill addresses those concerns and those issues, and actually we'll be carrying the military voting bill as well, and I think the military being quite concerned about security and about the confidence of our elections, when they're asking also to expedite this process while maintaining security, I'm very comfortable with it. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, two definition questions that I have, and maybe I'm not sure Representative Kalin or Ms. Frazier. I'm wondering, is there a definition of an agent? I was trying to find it, and I'm not finding it. Maybe it's just somewhere else cross-referenced. And then also, I'm wondering about if you have any thoughts on health reasons, getting to the polls because of health reasons. I'm wondering what that actually means. If I have a cold and I just don't want to get out of bed, is that a health reason, or is it something significant in regards to a disability or things along those lines?
Ms. Frazier, do you want to answer those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I do not believe that that agent is defined. I'm not aware of a definition of agent in statute.
Ms. Frazier, Mr. Gehring's nodding his head also that you're correct.
In terms of the health reasons, voters would need to... I believe that in order to be eligible to have a ballot delivered to you, you need to fill out an application on which you would be swearing that you need to have the ballot delivered to you for one of the acceptable reasons. And so I think in some ways it would be up to the voter to determine whether or not they actually met the requirements and needed to have the ballot delivered to them.
Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I know there's others that have questions, so I have about 20 more, and I'll defer at this point.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, in response to that last question, that agent is not defined, I have some incredible concerns, especially when the author suggests that he's trying to improve the integrity and openness and fairness of the process, and he specifically discussed hoping that people don't have an agenda. I think that's a major problem. Even if you say that an agent can pick up three at a time, you didn't say how many times a day they can pick up three at a time. What I would like for the record from either Representative Kalin, the author, or from Ms. Fraser, because I heard Ms. Fraser testify that what we have heard, I don't want to know what we have heard unless you tell me who we are, and then I want numbers, and if we don't have them, that's fine, but for the record, I want to clear that we don't have numbers. First, who is the we when you say what we have heard in response to why this bill is here?
Ms. Fraser?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, we is the Secretary of State's office.
Okay. Representative
Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The new Secretary of State has heard that apparently this absentee balloting has been an issue, and I understand from Representative Hilty that it's less than 10% of the total vote, and I understand from the witness that testified earlier that about 11,000 folks are from the disabled community. I'd like to know if Representative Kalin can enlighten me, because he apparently is aware that this has been a problem with all the pressures that young families have now to get out and exercise their right to vote. Do we have numbers? Do you have numbers that show how many folks had to vote absentee ballot or were frustrated from voting because of family issues, because of a disability, because they were snowbirds? Can you please give us some specific facts? Because I would prefer, if we're going to start making some changes, which you and I apparently disagree on whether it will maintain and improve integrity versus what I think it will encourage confusion and possibly fraud. Do you have numbers, sir, that we can base this on?
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to address the first number that Representative Emmer asked about and direct him to line 4.32 and 4.33. An agent may deliver ballots to no more than three persons in any election.
It's over.
On to the second point, I knocked on 12,177 doors personally 2 years ago, 10,023 this time, and I heard repeatedly in my district, where 70% of my constituents of my workforce are commuting, repeatedly voters, would-be voters, who were not voters because of the frustrations of the process. I heard it dozens of times. So extrapolating out, you know, one of the most difficult things dealing with statistics, with elections issues, with any sort of system is judging the folks who are not on the radar, judging those who are effectively disenfranchised by hurdles along the process. So to answer your question, I think that we could pay for a study, appropriate millions of dollars and pay for the study, or we could just get done what we know needs to get done. Secondly, I think that there's a lot of outcry over election fraud. We've heard that term a lot. The latest purport that I heard is that we're talking about some number less than 100 of instances of even questionable behavior over the last decade of elections, and we're talking about general elections, in which we have approximately 2 million voters, primary elections, township elections, school district elections, special elections. I mean, if we want to go after my training's in architecture and planning, we talk about looking at things to scale. The problem here is who is being disenfranchised, at what scale, and are the safeguards there so that we can address the issues that you've raised. I believe the safeguards are there. I believe that we are doing what we should be doing to make elections fair and open and accessible and secure.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Emmer, as far as the absentee voting is concerned, I'm not entirely sure of this. I think that the figures for absentee balloting are actually in the blue book, along with other elections statistics. But I know that they're readily available anyway. Every county auditor keeps track of how many absentee ballots they sent and how many they received and counted, of course. As far as knowing how many people didn't vote, I don't know how, or for that reason, I don't know how we figure that out. We, of course, do know how many people that would have been eligible to vote were not registered, and we know how many people that were registered didn't vote. But I do think that the absentee ballot numbers are readily available. I'll look as soon as we have the opportunity today and see if they are in the blue book, and if they're not, I'll find that out.
And Mr. Chairman, that's great, because perhaps he could help the author and Ms. Fraser too, if they're going to be carrying this, so we can have it in the future.
Rep. Symbols.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, in your earlier comments, if I understood you correctly, you talked about your auditor being quite freely able to give out absentee ballots. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson.
Representative Kalin.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I'm then puzzled why you heard from so many people in your district about the process, if it's so easy in your area to get absentee ballots. And further, why, if it's already so easy to get them, why we need to add the amount of days and make it even easier in the statute. I mean, there's always been the concern that some people just really don't want to put out the energy to vote, and we just need to find those people so we can take the ballots to them, mark it up for them, and then return it.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson. My concern on this issue is that other county auditors may not be embracing the enfranchise of voting as readily. I also think it's important to recognize that having the time to drive from, let's say, Stacy, where our largest mobile home park is, or from the northern end of Rush City in my district, or in a Representative Houses district, much more spread out, to the county seat, to be able to vote in person in advance of an election, to vote, in essence, absentee, even though you're voting in person, is a very different situation than having to mail in an absentee ballot application and then receive the ballot and go back. I think that what we do want is to make sure that those who want to vote can vote, and that's the point of this bill.
Rep. Symbols.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kalin, that doesn't address the point that you have an auditor who gives them out freely, and you've heard from so many people that still don't like the process. That doesn't add up, and that leaves very significant concerns. I appreciate your noble efforts to try to make things better for all the other parts of the state, but your points aren't connecting for me. And I will keep thinking about that as I look through the bill. Thank you.
Representative Kalin, you want
to? I'll just say very briefly, Representative Olson, I think we can disagree about that part, and I think we'll leave it up to the will of the committee about how well it's connecting.
Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and Representative Kalin, I'm interested in your statistics that if you knock on 2,000 less doors, you increase your margin by 2,000 and get elected. I've been a little careful about putting that one out. But anyway, I just want to point out to members of the committee that the word agent and 3 days is all old language that has been in law since certainly well into the last century. So if it's been a problem, we didn't need to, it's not a new problem that Representative Kalin is bringing to us. If it's people who think it's such a terrible problem should have been looking at the voting laws earlier and working on changing it.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn. I try to only bring old problems to the table as much as I can.
No, Representative Kahn, I was wondering if that was in cuneiform or hieroglyphics, but we'll move on.
What?
Never mind. Let's go to Representative Broad. I'm sorry.
I thought I thought in the speech that we had in caucus about language, we weren't allowed to use words that had that many syllables.
Representative Kahn, I think the basis of our law code goes back to Hammurabi, which would be cuneiform, but we're not going to get into that. Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I hear about these old problems, and what I wanted to tell the committee is that the House Republicans stand ready to bring new solutions to these old problems.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kalin, I'm wondering about, we all trust our post office explicitly. We have a wonderful postal system in our country, but once in a while, I get something in my mailbox that doesn't quite belong to me, and I don't keep it because that's a problem, even if it's a check or especially if it's a bill. But I'm wondering, in the system of streamlining or making it easier, I'm wondering in terms of the ability to tamper and the integrity issue, if you take away the application piece, it seems to me that that piece is a stop check for either bad addresses or somebody who has moved. I just recently moved, and if I had my application sent to me at my old address, at some point they stopped forwarding them, and the people who bought my house keep getting some of my mail. If it was sent there, they would then have my ballot if you took out the piece of the application, if I understand it correctly. So if you leave it the way it is, the application would be sent to me at my other house. If I don't get it, then nothing happens. And I still have the opportunity to go request the ballot with my new addresses. If I haven't changed my driver's license. But if you take away that piece, that ballot is now sitting in the hands of somebody else, or could be sitting in the hands of somebody else, and that would concern me greatly too. All they'd have to do is send it on in and make a vote, maybe in a different way than I would.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, looking at this from the numbers perspective and from the statistics perspective, if we are requiring for this process, for the existing process, an application to be mailed out, to be mailed in, a ballot to be mailed out, and to be mailed in, and we're reducing two of those steps, we're actually statistically improving the process here that you're concerned about.
No, Mr.
Chairman.
No, what I'm concerned about is somebody else is voting on my ballot. That's what I'm concerned about, and I don't know how removing those steps improves that process. If my ballot is sitting in somebody else's mailbox, that's what I'm concerned about.
Representative Kalin.
I'd actually ask Ms. Fraser to address some of the situations involving, some of the protocol involving bad addresses.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, that's a really great question, and I'm happy to answer it. There are a few safeguards in place. One is that all of the mail around elections is non-forwardable. So the Postal Service should not forward any of the mail and should return it to the sender if the person no longer lives there. There also is, as I mentioned before, the signature match requirement. So if someone did get your ballot and fill it out, they would have to sign it. And the signatures would not match, and therefore it would not be counted. Finally, we have the Secretary of State's office, Representative Emmer, has worked with the county auditors and city clerks on this issue, and have talked about needing to combine this provision with a piece that we'll be bringing forward in the automatic registration bill that would update people's addresses as they change them with the Postal Service, so that we won't be sending mail to old addresses. We will be updating them as people move.
Representative Robby, someone who wishes to testify to the absentee ballot issues, so that may address some of your concerns with the mailing. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brad Letso, legislative director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and I know there's been discussion or concern about the ongoing status on absentee ballots. That is one thing we work with through the Voting Rights Coalition, of which we're part of, and actually the Secretary of State's office convened a meeting with the counties, cities, interested parties to work out the issue on that, because the counties did have some concerns on that as far as being integrity and everything else. And they feel, I don't want to speak for them, you can certainly talk to them. I think they feel more comfortable now with the with that process. The reason being that we were concerned about that, and if you want to talk, I can just talk within somewhat our organization numbers. It was the railroad workers substantially that and approximately there's three different branches of locomotive engineers and Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way folks and others that basically are a lot of some of the engineers are actually on call pretty much consistently. And in fact, last weekend on there was a meeting on Monday morning on this issue that the Secretary of State's office convened, and one of the legislative person for the locomotive engineers wasn't sure if he could be there because he was on call, and he wasn't sure if he was going to be on a train in Montana at that point. The Brotherhood of Maintenance and Way employees, they have about 1,500 in the state. They have 750. At any one time, they will start when, like now, this time of the year, they will be working. They work on the track. They will be down, a few states south where they can actually work on the track and work their way back. Over the summer, they will be in Minnesota. By the time fall hits, they will be working their way back again. They are lucky if they get home one weekend a month. They have applied for applications for absentee ballots. A lot of those folks have. The problem is they get the application, they never get back to actually cast the ballot. They are very concerned about fraud. We believe that the issue here of the signature match is very important, and that is on there as well. But quite honestly, there are folks that want to vote within, and I'm just talking about the union folks. I also have anecdotally, and I don't want to go into it, but I've gotten calls from non-union people that have seen this going through and said, you know, this would help me. I know Representative Hilty mentioned independent trucker. I actually got a call, and he says, you know, I may not necessarily agree with your issues, but I appreciate the effort here because I'm on the road. I apply for an absentee ballot, I get an application, and I never get to vote. So as far as numbers, I can just say that we have within the railroad industry, probably 4,500, 5,000 people, less than half of those probably at any one time, and according to the statistics through the union representatives, say that would be very much of an assistance for them. So,
thank you. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And would you think that the union representatives or somebody from your organization would be considered an agent for these folks?
Mr. Lito.
I don't think they're going to get into the agent situation. They're not going to be delivering the ballot for them. But I will say that I agree with, and I was thinking that myself with Representative Kahn. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. With Representative Kahn on that, that has been in statute for a long time, and agent as well as the 3 days, certainly the word agent, I've not heard problems with that. We would have I think no problem working on some kind of definition of agent for a future bill. So, thank you.
Representative Wolfgang, was this to this question?
No, I have a question for Ms. Fraser.
Any more questions? No? All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming down. Representative Wolfgang.
Chair members, Ms. Fraser, we've talked a lot about campaigning, and actually I'm pretty idealistic when it comes to campaigning, so I've went to any number of nursing homes over the years, and that's actually where my concern is. I mean, I've gone to a nursing home in my town three times now, and typically, you know, sometimes there's 5 people out of 80 that want to vote. Sometimes there's one, sometimes there aren't any. And it seems like, you know, as I walk through those nursing homes and I have members in those nursing homes, I think, gee whiz, of all the people who should be voting, you know, there's 80 people here that should be voting, yet they don't feel they can or they don't want to. And so actually I am concerned about this bill from perhaps an auditing standpoint. Based on my experience of this one, I'll just use this one nursing home as an example. Typically, the votes that I see, you know, or people saying they want to vote is maybe 1 to 5 out of 80. So now the next voting cycle that comes through, if I saw 80 votes, you know, coming out of that facility, I would really wonder about that. And I'd want to know what audit or what kind of procedures are you going to have in place for situations like that, of where people are going to, you know, sign and say that they get a ballot from now on?
Ms. Fraser?
Mr. Chair, Representative, Boston nursing homes, actually, according to other pieces of statute, are very well served by the auditors. The auditors are required under state statute to send a pair of election judges to each nursing home to administer absentee voting in person. And so, you know, one Democrat and one Republican judge go to each nursing home and sit with the voters while they sign their application and then while they fill out their ballot. So this provision probably wouldn't impact them nearly as much as it would other voters.
Representative Wolfgang.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm probably dense on this, Ms. Fraser. What I'm trying to get at is that sounds good to me because there's actually, you know, someone interacting. What I'm trying to get at is, does this bill allow absentee voting for the nursing home? So in past, where I saw 1 or 5 people maybe wanting to vote in the next election cycle, if I agree to this, would I see 80 votes coming out of that because of absentee ballots?
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolfsager, I'd like to direct you to the existing language in the beginning of Section 1. The eligibility for absentee voting currently are what we propose to change, but unable to go to polling place. Under the existing statute, your concern would still, I disagree with your concern, but addressing it, any eligible voter who reasonably expects to be unable to go to the polling place on election day, I think you're talking about these voters. And then if I can direct you to page 3, which I think is where your concern is, and if it's not, please speak up. Somewhere along the line of section 4 of the bill, subdivision 3, delivery of ballots, item 4, lines 3.15 to 3.22, deliver the absentee ballots in a sealed transmittal envelope to an agent who has been designated to bring the ballots to a voter who is a patient in a healthcare facility. I believe currently that statute addresses that issue, and this actually would clean it up quite a bit.
Representative Boltrack, does that help you?
You know, Chair, Representative Kalin, I'm actually concerned about the same things that Representative Broad and Representative Emmer are bringing up, but in different ways. I mean, I want to make sure the people that are intended to vote are actually filling out those ballots, and I don't want to see a situation, and I'm probably as idealistic as you are, Representative Kalin, in that I want everyone who can vote, but I don't want I don't want absentee ballots somehow used by other groups to add votes.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolfschlager. I don't think it's unrealistic to think that in such a situation, any time that you have an increase in voter turnout from a specific location, for instance, in one of my precincts in 2004, we had 108% turnout because it's based on the number of registered voters as of 7 a.m. And the easiest way to explain that is that there were hundreds of more housing units added in that precinct through development. So an auditor looking at the results would say, huh, what's going on? And then common sense, you can add up what's happening there. I think the same thing would arise if you saw that same increase. And I think our county auditors have looked at this bill, and they're doing a pretty good job around the state. And I think that would raise enough concern to go in and look.
Members, I'm going to have just a brief time out here and remind everyone that we are supposed to be out of here at 9:30. And then next week we will have a full agenda, probably Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. On Tuesday we will have the governor's bill to reorganize DOOR. That will be up first on Tuesday. Representative Mahoney's bill dealing with University of Minnesota and its unique bonding authority request. Representative Paulson has a bill up on Wednesday, House File 1, Representative Thiessen. And if Representative Peterson, I don't know, Representative Peterson had talked to me about his bill. Was that introduced yet, Representative Peterson?
Yes, but I will not be here next Thursday.
You won't be, all right. But he has a bill that he has talked to us about, and it's in a way a companion to Representative Morgan's bill on a related issue, so we want to make sure that bill is heard. So I want to remind members that we have 20 minutes today, and if everyone can get their questions in soon, and if you do have any amendments, let's handle them, but let's try to proceed with this bill because we have two others on the agenda, and we have a full week next week. So that's the end of the timeout. We're back. Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wolfschlager. I think that the signature match is key to the security of absentee ballots, both currently and under any of the changes that we're talking about, that voters would have to fill out an application and sign it, and then their signature is matched to the ballot before it's counted. And so I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand your question, and I'm hoping that helps, but I don't think the situation for nursing homes in particular is changing very much under this proposal.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think I can speak to that, too. I have a precinct with typically 1,800 people voting. Over 700 of them vote by absentee ballot because of nursing home and seniors. And that system does really work well. Judges go over there as volunteers, help them vote. It really works pretty slick. And I think that system is pretty well buttoned down.
Representative Olson, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, and to this point, you said you don't think this is changing that system. I appreciate hearing that it works well, but I'm not sure how that this won't change that system or won't affect it. Can you explain why you don't think it will? And can you explain with certainty that it won't or if it will?
Representative Kalin or Ms. Frazier, I'm not too sure which, but whichever.
Ms. Frazier.
Ms. Frazier, all right, there we go.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, under this bill, we would keep the same process where, you know, two election judges would still go to every nursing home and administer the absentee balloting. I believe that the one change under this bill is that voters who were there last year and had already signed up for ongoing absentee ballot status would no longer need to sign the application in the presence of the election judges because it would already be on file. They would still need to fill out the ballot and sign it, and then those signatures would be matched by the election judges on election day. So I believe that's the only change that would be made, is whether they're signing the absentee ballot application as they fill out the ballot or whether it's on file.
Thank you for that clarification.
Right, Representative Emmer. No, you're not. You're clear. Representative Anderson.
I have a couple of questions, and I'm hoping maybe to give Representative Kalin some help here on a couple of concerns that he had mentioned earlier. And one of them, you had mentioned earlier the concern that you have for your constituents and the long commute that they have. You know, I completely understand that. I come from working at St. Paul and commuting back to Plymouth, and though that doesn't seem far, it actually comes out to be a long commute. But I don't know if you're aware of this, Representative Kalin, but we actually do have a law in place that allows employees to take time off from work without punishment from their employer. So that is to protect them so that they have that right to vote. The other thing that I wanted to mention to you, you had also mentioned school events and, you know, soccer games and things like that. We also have another law in place that says that public schools are not allowed to public elementary and secondary schools are not allowed to have events, school-sponsored events, between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. So in the effort to make sure that people have that time and they're not going to some basketball game or, let's see, volleyball game probably at that point. So those things are in place, and I'm confident that because of those things that people, with taking the responsibility that comes with voting, have the option to vote. I also have had the opportunity to actually vote by absentee, and it was very easy to do. I got my application. I wasn't quizzed down on why I wasn't going to be at the polling place that day, and I've actually done it at several different places. I've had the opportunity to live across the state of Minnesota, and I've never had a problem with that issue at all. And it is relatively easy, and I think evidence of that is how many people actually do vote by absentee. I found when I was outdoor knocking this summer and fall that I happened to have a lot of snowbirds in my legislative district, and a lot of them like to leave before the November election because they want to get out of town before the snow flies, especially since the Halloween storm of a couple years ago. I think it frightened everybody out of Minnesota. So, you know, I guess what my concern is that we're doing a piece of legislation that really is not solving any problems. We already have a good system in place, and I am concerned about the voter fraud issue that Representative Broad brought forward, because I don't know if you know this, but I am a part-time postal worker. I actually get a lot of my neighbor's mail. I can count on getting one piece of my neighbor's mail per week. And it's a great way to meet my neighbors. I live in a large development, and so I'm sure that, you know, contributes to the fact that I do receive a lot of misdelivered mail. But I am concerned that without having that witness in place, that we are not protecting ourselves against voter fraud. And I think that that is more important to the citizens of Minnesota, to make sure that we have integrity in our voting system, than anything else. And I think that what we have in place addresses the concerns. People can and have access to absentee ballots. And I know, Representative Hilty, you had brought some issues up regarding people that are over the road. I happen to have some family members that have occupations like that, and they have never had a problem in voting because they have taken the time and effort to make sure that they do the steps they need to take to get their votes, their ballots, and their votes in place. I think that we are responsible as individuals. It's our responsibility to make sure that we take those steps to vote. And I'm very concerned about this legislation. I think that we are opening ourselves up to unintended consequences. And I know you don't want to have voter fraud. I know that that's not your intent. But I just want you to give that some really careful consideration.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative
Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, as you know, probably the most, as a postal worker, probably the most violated law in our society is the one banning the use of mailboxes for distributing campaign literature, and thus far, and certainly seen that firsthand. One of the next sort of below that echelon is the school events on election day, whether formal or informal. I think there's often a lot of informal activities that happen that, you know, I've certainly raised it as an issue when, as both a student and also an instructor. But the reality is that it's just times have changed, and there are Girl Scouts issues and Boy Scouts events and church events and other, and just the variety of making ends meet for so many people in our society that there are those conflicts. And, you know, I, again, we hear a lot of broad accusations and concerns about lawbreakers. Oh, excuse me.
Kevin, that's true.
A lot of general concerns. Vague. Wait till we get a representative vague in here somewhere. But a lot of concerns about you know, this may happen, this could happen. We know that right now that there are those who are being disenfranchised by the hurdles in this process, and that while many auditors and many of our local election officials, and I would say nearly all of them, are doing a fantastic job and administering the process fairly, we do want to make sure that that process is administered fairly and that the law reflects what is currently happening.
Representative Kaelin, Representative Brown has an amendment, and I think Mr. Gehring has the amendment, so if Representative Brown wants to move her amendment, and then Mr. Gehring will explain the amendment. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. I will move the amendment as read by Mr. Gehring.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gehring.
Hey, Mr. Chair, the amendment I have here has two parts. First is on page 3, line 22, after the period, insert new language, an agent under this clause must be a person previously known by the voter. And the second part, page 4, line 32, before the period, insert new language, and that the voter previously knew the agent.
All right, Mr. Gehring, why don't we go back to line 22 and just slowly go through that sentence. An agent under this clause must be, what was it?
The phrase is, an agent under this clause must be a person previously known by the voter.
And what was this second one then?
The second one is on page 4, line 32.
And what was that language?
Before the period, on line 32, insert, and that the voter previously knew the agent. So the sentence there would be, the affidavit must include a statement from the voter stating that the ballots were delivered to the voter by the agent in the sealed transmittal envelope and that the voter previously knew the agent.
All right. So it's inserted before the period after.
Right.
Envelope.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I'm sorry, who said? I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
I'm on the curve here. I actually, if I could, with Representative Broad, I'd rather have it that the agent be someone that is designated from the county auditor's office so that we have that person is bound by their position in government to make sure that they're properly delivering the ballots, and I don't know if you're amenable to making it that.
Representative Anderson, I would be not opposed to that. Why don't we give this a shot first? And if this moves in that direction, then let's try another leap.
All right. Let's ask the author, just because he is. Representative Kaelin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can just read this back to make sure I have this right, Mr. Gehring. Line 3.22, adding, an agent under this clause must be a person previously known by the voter. Is that correct?
That's right.
I'm comfortable with that language, and I just want to make sure I understand the second part of this amendment. 4.32, add after the period, after envelope period. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Delete the... Can you again read what that section is?
Page 4, line 32, before the period, so we're adding this to the end of the sentence. We're inserting, and that the voter previously knew the agent. So this is saying that the affidavit that the voter has to submit must include statements that the ballot was delivered to the voter by the agent and that the voter previously knew the agent. So it's conforming to the first part of the amendment.
Representative Kaelin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an issue with the second part of the amendment, in that it switches. I think the intent of Representative Broad's amendment here is to make sure that we don't have an army of thousands of people harvesting votes. I think Representative Willis Rogers sort of along your concern, and that we don't have folks actually actively getting those 80 voters out of that nursing home or assisted living facility. And there, I think that the first part of it puts it on the agent appropriately. So I think the second, if I believe I have that correct. And then I think the second, though, with the signed affidavit, actually puts the burden more on, and creates a technicality under which we could have all sorts of challenges unnecessarily. I think we're all concerned about the litigiousness of our society, and I think this actually would make that situation a little worse here, especially since we've already qualified the agent. In terms of being delivered to the voter by the agent is already covered there if the previous party amendment is adopted.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the question of agency here, we need to look at how and consider how things already work in this regard. If you look at line 4.26, for instance, it makes clear that the way agency arises is that the agent is designated by the voter. So I think that the system that's in place currently has already taken the concerns that have been expressed here into account, and I think that current law provides for that. I don't see any necessity for this amendment. It doesn't really change anything.
Representative Kim, you want to respond?
Mr. Chairman, I do think that this language is still needed. The agent, as suggested by Representative Hilty, is identified by that person, but there's nothing that says that person actually has to know their agent. Somebody could provide them a group of people, and that group of people could say, hey, we're going to go pick up your ballots. I have no clue who you are, but we're going to go pick up your ballots for you. And all this says, it's pretty simple. It's not about, lawsuits. It's pretty simple. Is when the voter signs the form saying that they got the ballot, they're also signing that they know the person. It's not that difficult.
Representative Palin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, actually, I believe by its very nature, the purpose of an affidavit is destined for challenge.
Representative Olson, did you have a...
Mr. Chair, that Representative Kalin, I think you were correct in your initial statements that the first part is good and the second part simply confirms that the first part happened. So I think they both go well together, and I'd support the amendment.
All right. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think the amendment is necessary. I don't support it. There's no definition of what previously means. Is that 5 seconds, 1 second, 5 weeks? And, again, we've had something that we've had no problems with. No one has raised a problem with this. It's old language, and I would suggest that the author just turn down the amendment.
Rev. Sandra.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we're following that line of logic, then there's no need for the bill. We've heard many times that the system's working. We've heard that people are getting to the polls. The idea about disenfranchisement, I look at that as well and say, why do we want to allow legal voters to be disenfranchised by illegal votes that are potentially out there? So it's just a difference of opinion. But if we follow your logic, then we should be moving this bill onto the table, Mr. Chairman.
All right, let's get the author to have a definitive statement on the Broad Amendment.
Mr. Chair, members...
Talent.
I think the second part of the amendment is troubling, and as the two are together, I would oppose it.
All right. So the motion before us is the... Broad Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Now, motion does not prevail. So the bill is before us as amended.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I would like to make an amendment and define the agent. I would feel more comfortable that these ballots are being delivered by the county auditor's office through their employees to make sure that the person's identity is verified, that everything is on the up and up, and to prevent voter fraud overall. So in those two places, rather than what was suggested earlier, I have the agent defined as an employee of the county auditor's office. And I'm hoping that Mr. Gearing could help me with that.
So, Representative Anderson, are you simply redoing what was the broad amendment by defining agent? Is that what you want?
If that's what Mr. Gearing thinks would be best.
Mr. Gearing, you have some language that would...
assuming I'm understanding the amendment correctly, I think it would be on page 4, line 26, replace the word designate and insert have. And then page 4, line 27, after the period, insert the agent must be designated by the appropriate county auditor.
All right. We have an individual who I think has come to testify to this point, so well, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and to the Anderson Amendment.
Mr. Chairman, my members, my name is Ann Higgins. I'm from the League of Minnesota Cities. I work on election policy with election officials who administer absentee voting in cities. County auditors have authority to delegate that authority to cities, and in the metro area in particular, and in larger cities throughout the state, many city election officials administer the absentee voting process with the help of the county auditor, who has the access to the state voter registration system. With respect specifically to this question of employees of the city or the county auditor delivering, being the agent of delivery, that situation would make it extraordinarily difficult, really, from where I understand it, to be really unworkable. The unpredictability of when that would need to be taken care of and the number of people that might call for that at any given moment would make it unrealizable. We do put people out at the nursing homes. We do send people to residential places. We do go to the hospitals to take care of emergency situations when somebody is going into surgery unexpectedly or is hospitalized for other reasons unexpectedly. But there is really, from my understanding of the way the workflow goes, particularly just prior to election, the expectation that we could get agents to those individuals, to all of them, who wish to have an agent. In most cases, those are people that those people have some understanding that they have a reliance that they can get the ballot from them or the application and get it back in time. But we might have difficulty performing to that standard if we had to rely on people we would probably want to, you know, try to go to try to do that job, but to train them all, to make sure that we knew exactly who we had available at any given moment, particularly in larger communities, or even the smaller ones where you only have one city election official running the whole thing, and then some election judges who are not due to be on hand until election day, that might not be the best way to go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Ms.
Hearing those comments, maybe the better amendment then would be to make it so that removing the language that says that there doesn't need to be a witness present, and adding that language back in so that there is a witness present to sue, again, to address the issue of potential voter fraud.
Okay, Representative Anderson, I'm not sure what you're going to do now. You're going to withdraw?
I'll withdraw my initial amendment.
And then your new amendment would be what?
My new amendment would be, and I believe that is on page 4, and again, if Mr. Gearing could help me out here, making it so that the if a person was not previously registered, that they still need to have a witness present, rather than just doing the comparison of the signatures.
That's a new language.
Representative Anderson, can you point to a line or? Perhaps some kind of let's let Mr. Gearing do it.
I know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, are you referring to the language on page 4, lines 7 and 8? If you wanted
I believe
to
so, yes. Yes.
I'm so Mr. Gearing, confused about where you want to move that to.
Well, if I'm understanding it correctly, Representative Kalin, initially it stated that people no longer have to have, if they are not previously registered, no longer have to have a person present to, as they get their ballot. Is that correct, Representative Kalin?
I'm going to defer to
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it's actually if they are pre-registered that they would no longer need to show someone that their ballot was blank when they received it.
Okay, I misunderstood that. Okay, and is that on the page? Let me see. No, where would that be here in the bill?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that is what Section 5 of the bill does. So the new language and stricken language on page 4, or the top of page 4, 4.7 and 4.15. So if you were not pre-registered, you would still have to have a witness. You would still have to show them your proof of residency. It's only if you were pre-registered that you would no longer need to show someone that you received a blank ballot.
Okay, so the removal, so the, Mr. Chair, Ms. Fraser, then the removal of that language then would still make it a requirement that even people that are pre-registered would still need to have a witness present. Is that correct?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, that is correct.
Okay, and that's the intent that I have.
It's so, Representative Anderson,
so,
the way
Chair,
I'm following this discussion, it's already covered. You don't need your amendment. No.
No. No, that's not what I'm understanding. She's saying that the language that, the new language and remove the deleted language on, so on lines 4.7, it says if the voter was not previously registered, that language would be removed, and on lines 4.15, the stricken language would be reinserted.
All right. So, Mr. Gehring, you want to walk us through what this is again?
Mr. Chair, if I'm understanding correctly, I think Representative Anderson wants to just take out Section 5 of the bill. Is that correct? Because those are the only changes.
Well, essentially, yeah, that would be the effect of it, because you wouldn't be changing that section of the bill. You would keep it as current law has it, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Representative Anderson, you're comfortable with, that is your amendment?
Yes.
All right. And, Mr. Gehring, you have it.
So, the amendment would be to delete Section 5.
All right. Representative Hilty, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this provision that is contained in Section 5 is a valuable provision. We're asking people to jump through hoops that are totally unnecessary. This removing this language would not do anything to enhance security, integrity, or anything else. It would just go back to making it more difficult for people that already have difficulty for whatever reason. I think that this was a reasonable proposal to begin with, and I would oppose the amendment.
All right. Anything else to the amendment? Seeing no other discussion on the amendment, all those in favor of the Anderson amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative Brock.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask for a roll call on the bill, please.
All right. Representative Brown has requested a roll call. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kalin renews his motion that House File 768 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. The clerk will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Broad?
No.
Representative Emmer?
No.
Representative Filkey?
Aye.
Representative Hollis?
Aye.
Representative Kahn?
Aye.
Representative Keenan?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Peterson?
Aye.
Representative Coffey?
Aye.
Representative Simon?
Aye.
Representative Lindquist?
Aye.
No.
Seeing 11 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Members, we really have another committee coming in here, so Actually, we don't have another committee coming in. We don't have another committee coming
in. Chairman, don't you think House File 75 might be real easy?
Well,
I just ask the people who have been taking a lot of time if they're intending to take a lot of time in those two bills and just decide,
well,
find out if there's anything.
Rep. Sampat, I thought there was another committee. There isn't. So this should be an easy bill for a number of reasons. And I hate to skip over Representative Hilty, but I'm going to move House File 75, recommended to pass to be sent to the General Registry. House File 75, members, is a request from former Representative Skoglund, then Senator Skoglund. It's been carried by Senator Est. When he disbanded his campaign committee, he wanted to donate what was left in his campaign treasury to a nonprofit organization, and he was prevented from doing it. This bill would allow that to occur. Nothing is simple around here, but I said that I would carry it on the House side, and that's the totality of the bill. I have no one to testify for it other than Senator Skoglund and in his recommendation that he wanted to donate what was left in his campaign treasury to a nonprofit, a charitable organization. That's the bill. Or some house.
Well, Mr. Chairman, our state representative considered nonprofit.
Representative Howes, I think you can already do that if you want to do that. This bill would allow you to do something that might be a little more beneficial.
Is there any?
Seeing no further discussion?
Did you move it?
I did. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Members, we do have, and Representative Hilty, your bill would probably take a considerable period of time. And
okay.
I didn't mean to skip over you.
Yeah.
But we will put you back up next week. Members, we do have a full calendar for next week. We're going to start at 8, and we have bills by the governor, and we have bills by both caucuses. So let's be here on time and continue. With that, meeting is adjourned.